Hello and welcome back to the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my glorious co-host, Mikael Christiansen. How are things going, Mikael?
Yeah, not too bad. Preparing for the last residency and finishing off Vald, the goddamn handstand show that has been in development hell for all of COVID and beyond. So we're going to start that the 5th of July and then premiere the 24th of July, I think, in a city called Braga in Portugal. I think that's the city. I'm still not entirely sure.
Even the hosts don't know where they're hosting you.
Yeah, like the thing is that the festival is like spread across a couple of cities, and I don't remember exactly where we play when and so on. But yeah, first we need to finish it, and yeah, that's going to be stressful. That is all I know.
Yeah, that last week of doing things, getting tired, everyone shouts at each other, then it all comes together at the end.
Yeah, that is the problem. That like that very often happens, but you can't trust it to happen. I mean, usually like, oh shit, it's gonna suck. Like 1 week left, and then you sort of find a better solution.
Yeah,
but you can't guarantee it, and that's what always makes it stressful. So we have a ton of work left to do. So just like organizing on getting all that stuff done. I went and weighed all our canes and our plates yesterday, and there's 115 kilos worth of canes and plates.
Whoa. So
it's a bit. So we're going to chuck all that in the car, drive down to Copenhagen, not to Denmark, to a city called Odense.
Odense.
On Monday and start working. And then, hopefully sort everything out and hopefully nothing cancels. Who knows about that too? I mean, yeah. Portugal is having like some surge of like COVID, bloody blah, so yeah, who knows? We're at least going to go ahead as everything happens. Yeah. And fingers crossed. That is all I have to say.
Basically. Speaking of Odense, shout out to the Denmark Odense crew. I know there's a few of you listening in. Remember, the Denmark juggling convention was held in Odense 1 year. We went to it. It was one of the coolest conventions ever. All the Denmark juggling crew were quite nice. Everyone, you know, we know some of them. But the convention, just give a bit of a high. So a juggling and sort of circus convention, generally, like, they can be small and they can be big. This one was quite small. And it was kind of, but I think it was like in January, like the 4th of January or something, over a weekend, when it was, or something like that, very close to Christmas, very close to New Year's time. So it wasn't a camping festival, obviously, because Denmark would not be fun to camp in that time. But they managed to get some school that would let everyone sleep in the school and have the convention there. And it was cool. They put on food. They had one of the organizers, Anton, his dad was a chef and, you know, ended up teaching everyone how to make bread because his bread was so good. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, it was one of the most debauched renegades I've ever been involved in hosting. Like, yeah. What happens in Renegade stays in the Renegade. For those who don't know what a Renegade is, it's an open mic show for juggling and circus and other stuff where you have a host who kind of MCs the event. And then you can get up and you do a trick. And it's kind of, it's not really for talented stuff. It is for talented stuff, but more comedy and other weird things. And yeah, I can't even go into it. I guess I have one thing of like, there was a leek juggling challenge where you had to juggle 5 leeks, the vegetable, while standing in a bucket. Unfortunately, this bucket over a period of the night had started to get filled with like beer, vomit, and other stuff. And it's pretty darkness. It was very darkness. Anyway, that's one of the things that happened at this. And that's a hint. That was on one of the lower points. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? I believe we are going to talk about training volume. We're going to talk about, you know, how much volume is enough. Can we overtrain? Which you probably already, if you're listening to this cast, you probably already know you can't overtrain. Can you undertrain? Is probably something. Probably half the people listening to the cast are listening and going like rubbing their wrists at this moment, going, oh, wrists feel a bit jank. Should I do that 6 training session this week or should I take a break? Go look at intensity, difference of volume for skill, conditioning, body parts, I suppose, to take a hit. And, you know, maybe we'll touch on what you can work on instead when you can't get on your hands. So, I suppose, where do we start? It's kind of a broad topic.
Or is yeah, it broad? Yeah, I think, like, I mean, just starting by the word of volume. I mean, like, yeah, it's, I guess, volume isn't everything in this topic. I mean, it is, like, intensity and frequency will matter a lot as well. But I think with, like, I mean, if we look at kind of a weekly volume, or, like, how much do you do, how much do you end up doing, like, it varies drastically, I mean, on the level of the performer and the capacity. But I think that, like, the handstands or, like, handstand as a discipline and kind of, like, the community of the people that do it have a tendency to do too much. I mean, I mean, I've been certainly a driving force in doing too much. I mean, yeah, doing 7 days a week for 7 years is just not a very good plan. So I don't recommend it. But yeah, handstands has the kind of the thing that it's very much kind of fresh meat in the, at least on the neurological and kind of balance side of things. Like you won't necessarily like the day where your muscles are refreshed and feel great doesn't necessarily coincide with a day where like your balance is sharp. And as we've talked about before, it's very difficult to know exactly what influences this. Like there are very many factors, but I think that, one of the large problems with training in this sense and with handstands and other similar activities is that they're very enjoyable to do. So if you are a person that trained a lot of handstands, you likely do it because you enjoy it quite a lot.
Yeah.
To be in the practice zone, to kind of like you do your warm up. It's your little ritual, and it's kind of like it's a thing you like to do. So that's where like it is very important there to kind of differ it a bit from kind of fitness strength training regimes where it's like you want to get in your solid session and then you want to rest. Like there is that component here too, but like if it is something you enjoy to do on a daily basis, like the fact of being able to enjoy the activity might be more important than to perfectly carefully plan out doing two sessions a week that are exactly like this so that you can optimize this and that and only do it this week. So it's complicated.
Yeah, it's also like, because it's the thing about strength training is it's very linear in terms of how you calculate volume or tonnage in a workout. It's like, oh, I've done 10 reps of 100 kg, my volume is 1,000 kg, and you can go, oh, so that's my kind of volume. So we can look at volume and then we can go, oh, I have 1,000 kg of recovery capacity. Oh, well, if I increase my intensity, which is the weight lifted, to say 150 kg, then I do less reps, one third less reps to get the same tonnage. So I can keep, this is kind of how we, our total tonnage of an athlete can sustain, can be worked out this way. And we go, okay, it's quite mathematical. But in handstands, obviously we can't calculate things as easy. So that's kind of gets where, you know, this is like, how do we track a total tonnage of a workout? Normally we do it by sets. Now I'm going to give an example of what I'm doing at the moment, because it's quite structured, my training. And it's like, so I'm doing one day on, one day off, two sessions a day on the on day. Each session is 11 sets, so it's 22 sets a day. But then at the same time, I'm also raising reps and time under tension. So then it's like, oh, I'm doing the same number of sets. It's very set on the minute. And then the increase in volume is coming by doing one rep or 2 to 5 seconds longer on the holds every 4 days. So that's given me quite a very measurable amount of training. At the same time, as I kind of mentioned on the last cast, my wrist has been unhappy lately. It's not limiting me, but it's something that I'm like, oh, this titration up in training volume, I'll be able to very easily track and go, oh, if the wrist does become an actual issue or swells up or something, then I'll go, okay, I need to do less. So very easy to control it. Now, the other thing is like right now, I'm just working on pure strength work for handstands. Literally just doing wall holds and wall flags and D these kind of things just to build up like duration. So this is a very like conditioning and strength focused method of handstand training that's very trackable. But at the same time, once I would go on to more balancing work, that's when things get kind of interesting, because it's like, well, if one set was really easy and lasted 10 seconds, but one set was a massive fight, but it lasted 10 seconds, are they the equivalent training volume? And that's where things get nebulous.
Yeah, and like sometimes what we want to is to be efficient and use as little energy as well. So yeah, it does become a total clusterfuck. So you have a couple of options when kind of tracking these things. One is like what Emmett is doing here with having quite kind of a structured approach where you know what you're looking for. And I think in any kind of training program or kind of a phase where you are working on kind of you're on the conditioning focus, let's say that like you can do three presses like in a session, but you'd like to go to being able to press like 10 times in a session or almost as often as you would like, then you'd better be off just focusing on that press and just like getting volume done on that. And then you can do it in this trackable sense, or if it's like pushing your endurance from like, let's say 42 seconds to a minute, you can do these kind of approaches and it will net you rather decent gains and you can see them. But if you're in a more technical phase where you're like either, let's say you're learning to move your legs in a handstand, or if you're like, let's say you're even on advanced one arms and you're constantly kind of working on super difficult things, then it might be harder to just use the same kind of thing. You could say like, I moved my legs three times back and forth on tuck to straddle, but like, it was the quality. Well, how was that? Like all these things come in then when you're talking more in kind of that technical aspect of things. So I think just in general, like, I mean, just to give some, to pop out a couple of numbers here, and I'm sure some people are interested in that, is like, what the hell do you do? Like, how many sessions do you train a week? Very common question to get. Should I train handstands every day? In general, no. I think training handstands every day just isn't a good idea. Like, even on very high levels or of high capacity, then at least one day a week is off just for like reducing the risk, preferably two. You don't need, like, I think a kind of a staple thing that has been commonly pushed in the handstand community, also including by me, is like they've kind of standard 5 days a week training handstands.
Yeah.
And like, it can certainly work. I rarely make people that are newer, like, unless like if you're working towards one arms and like your capacity is really solid and you want to have a focused face, yes, that can be a good idea. But unless you're on that kind of level, I don't think there is much point of training 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And then of course you have the extra stupid thing to add on top of this, which is like, is doing a couple of handstands in the park training? No, not really. Like going in and doing like seven sets of squats. Yeah, that's training. Like picking up a heavy weight in your like backyard and moving it across the yard isn't training. Like it's going to be kind of equivalent, but you need to be really good at kind of pacing yourself if it comes to these kind of more random, I just want to play around a bit sessions, because they very easily turn into like a full on training session. Like, I'm just going to do two handstands. And then like, I feel a bit warm. Okay, I'm just going to do a couple of this. And then suddenly you've trained for an hour and then you have the session again tomorrow that you're supposed to do. I think it's like, on average, the more days a week you train, the less of that stuff you need to do. So I think it's then better like have three sessions a week and leave yourself the space of having 2 days where you might mess around a bit, but you have nothing structured for example.
Yeah, it's definitely one of these things. I think one of the ways I program for people a lot is, I'm sure you do the same, is there's a different focus on every day. And this is the kind of thing, is like the more advanced you are, the more choice you have on things to work on. So you can kind of have a different focus on each day. A simple example of this would be like, oh, so we'll come in, start of the week, and we're going to work on our stuff that demand higher skills. And then the next kind of session might be working on strength stuff or pressing. Then the third session might be working on backbending shapes, something like this. So you're getting a different sort of strain and stimulus across the body, but you're not repeating the same workout over and over again. I think this is what gets people a lot, is like, oh, I'm working on just one thing or two things, and then I just do that every session. And this is, even in introducing constraints to your training, works great on this one. Like, I'll have days marked for people where it's like, okay, I want you to fight for balance today and just really do everything you can to stay up. And then other days it's like, no big saves. If you come off your precise balance point, it's gone, just come down. So this way is one of the ways of controlling sort of, particularly in the hands and fingers, more so is one of the ways I'm thinking about this, is like, okay, we're working precise setups, we're doing one arms, you're going on to a, you know, straight arm support or something, you push up, and if you start to rotate or twist, you've lost it, come down. And whereas other days might be like, okay, you're on block or whatever, and just like grab that thing and ride the donkey. Ride the tiger. I'd like to say ride the tiger, but exactly. Like, let's face it, it's like it's a very unruly donkey that doesn't want to actually have you on its back.
Yep, that is actually a very good point. Yeah, and it's having these like different kind of focus is it can also help you to kind of keep yourself in check when it comes to your energy expenditure. Because let's face it, it is the problem. But we have discussed before that, like, if you're doing a handstand, you are on your arms, and unless your like strength to weight ratio in your arms and upper back and all of that is so high that it's basically nothing for you, then you're going to fatigue over the week. And like me too, I've really started to change this approach as I got older, because I was, when I was 25, I could just go and 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 like several sessions a day, and it like it didn't affect me much.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like, it affects me, so I can't train as much, and like when I do, I can't recover, and I get less done, higher risk of injury, and gotten injured. I literally, like, the injury I've been passing through has been due to that.
Yeah.
And guess what's starting to fixing it? It's taking more time off and allowing the recovery to happen. And then it's also that trick that a tricky thing that a lot of people experience, including me, of feeling very off when you haven't balanced for a day or two. It's common, and I certainly experience it to a rather extreme degree sometimes. So like having that factored in is also one thing, because people are very obsessive with handstands and like, oh no, I have a bad day, I feel bad. And then you feel the urge to do a lot, or the urge to condition or whatnot. And then that just ends you up in a fatigue loop. So being able to manage this carefully is very tricky. And like it definitely is when you're working on more than like a couple of elements at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely like that kind of thing of managing fatigue and listening to the body is also very important, just what we'll get onto in a bit. But I think, like, just trying to think of my point here. I think this idea of like having a constraint or a focus on what you're going to be doing, and then making sure you're not repeating the same focus, even if your workout is the same or very similar stuff, can be very good. But the problem is, when you're trying to control, this is the problem when we're working on skill stuff and more technical stuff and the enjoyment factors, like, if something starts to work, people start to chase it and get off the focus. So it's kind of like, oh, you're going all good intent, I'm not going to do any big saves on my one arm. And then suddenly it starts feeling like it's going to be working. And you're like, oh, I'm going to do the big catches, or even like just correcting overbalance for the first time, or underbalance when you're doing a two arms. And then it goes like, oh shit. And then it's like the temptation just to do more kicks in very hard.
Yep.
And that is
I've been a very large self-inflicted victim of that.
Because
you do easily get Or like, yeah, or it doesn't work and you just want to try one more time. That's a classic one.
I think
like for press to handstand, that's one is huge. Like you were able to press off one block last time and you're kind of excited. You try from one block, you failed, and you've told yourself before, yeah, if it doesn't work on one block, I'm going to go back to two or three blocks and just do my work there. But no, God damn it, I didn't manage. I'm going to try again. But like, you're going to try your 1RM once more. Unlikely it's going to happen. You try, you get a bit more annoyed. You try a third time and you're pretty fried because you used, like, you did the max effort but failed. Then you go back to two or three blocks. You fail at that again. And then you go home feeling like a miserable piece of shit that lost your press to handstand. That is like very common. And I think it's a huge one to kind of consider when kind of pacing those things. And I think also just like as a general thing, which is a lot easier to reflect on with the weight training than handstand. But it's like if you're having those play trainings, don't try your maximal shit. Like think about it like that. You're just going to go to the gym and you're just going to stretch a bit. You're not really going to work out. You go on the treadmill and you jog a bit. That was all you were supposed to do. And then you go, I'm going to one RM my squat right now. Like, no one's going to do that. Like, not even the biggest idiot.
Hold on. Point of interjection. That sounds exactly like something I would do in the gym. I have done that.
And, don't do what Emmett does.
Yeah. I think it's kind of, it comes down to this idea of like, you can have a training plan. And I think everyone should have a training plan, either a detailed one or a time constrained one or something to go in. But then I think the training plan could have room for adaption. And this is, I think, what gets people is like, oh, you know, I'm always thinking of one arm people because like the amount of people injure their wrist when they're learning one arm when it just starts to work is immense. And I think it's like one of these things like, oh, you know, something works. It's the first day it clicks. You know, forefinger support is feeling great and you get the transition right. Or, you know, something simple. You feel the balance for the first time. And then you just want to, you know, ride the snake a little and go for it. But then I think you have to look at the training plan. What people would do is like, oh, I've done my one-arm conditioning. I added an extra, or my one-arm hold practice, or my two-arm hold practice, whatever, or my tuck hold practice, and it's working. But I've done an extra 10 sets of it because, like, you know what, it felt great. But then they'll go on and do the full conditioning program. And if you had kind of had a flow chart through this, you could go like, well, actually, I've done a lot of one-arm. I've done much more volume there, or much more sets anyway. I'm going to take some sets off other stuff. I'm going to do less conditioning and less holds or something like this. So the plan can be slightly flexible. And this idea is quite good. So that's one way to think about it. If you are one of these people who does want, you know, obviously wants to have a bit of room and when things are working, but at the same time, you're still like controlling, you know, it's almost this thing of like the same way I'm like measuring sets. Like if I have like, say, I'll give myself, you know, 20 sets is my workout, 20 like correct holds. And then it's like, well, I meant to split them four exercises and five sets each, but then one exercise I put 10 sets into. Well, then you have to reduce some sets from elsewhere or stop doing something just to pay the piper, I suppose. And that's one way of like, it's one way I like doing that sort of intermediate stages of workouts is give people a plan that goes like, oh, okay, you got 20 sets on your plan, but there's some freedom just to redistribute them if you want.
Yeah, it's certainly a strategy that can be used to, because ultimately what you want to do is you want to avoid getting into that pit where you're frustrated, annoyed, and you're tired, and you go like that for days on end because you keep trying when you're kind of wrecked. That's the concept I call the fatigue loop, which I've talked about several times, because like it will easily happen because it is a skill that you want to be able to maintain and hold on to, and it's something you worked hard for and so on. So it's important that you manage to kind of reset yourself properly, and like that you ensure some degree or like a proper degree of complete recovery, because if you don't, you're just going to end up like feeling too smashed. Like I said, like earlier, like let's say 4 years ago, I would be somehow fine with one day off a week and I'd be making good gains, no big issues or anything. nowadays, yeah. one day off a week is too little. Like, and instead of like, because I was kind of like trying to fight that for a while and just like trying to constantly get back on that kind of 6 days a week track, and yeah. it wasn't working. And like, what I find interesting also is that like, if nowadays when I do take more time off, I will very often have to have like this one day of like what I call calibration after I've taken a day off, just to make sure, okay, like how am I feeling? But on that day, like I used to do a ton. Like I used to finish that like with like endurance and stuff like that. And then like expect to come in the next day and like, okay, now I'm going to train properly. No, it doesn't work. Like, so what I'd have to do on the calibration day is like, take it really easy. Like we're talking like go up, do all of the kind of one arms that I do, like, maybe once or twice, and then just wrap it up. No, like, oh, I have to do 10 presses, or I have to do 2 minutes of this or 2 minutes of that. Yeah. No, just like finish it up early so that, like, okay, I've quote unquote calibrated so that I feel that I'm more ready for the day after, but I haven't spent a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I was so stubborn. I wanted to keep this kind of pace that I used to have, and it didn't help me. So it's really important to be able to kind of, swallow your pride on that, and take it from an idiot who spent much more time than necessary on this, and like allow yourself to consider that if you're in the position where you have a tendency to just end up too tired, because it's there is this common notion that like, oh yeah, I'm gonna do a 2 minute endurance hold at the beginning of every session, because that means that as soon as I get used to that, I'm gonna be really a lot stronger. And then you do five sessions a week where you do a 2 minute hold per in the beginning of each session, and if you don't recover properly from that, well, you're not going to get stronger. You're just going to like either you're just going to stalemate on it, and like nothing further is going to happen, or like you're increasing your injury risk. So
yeah,
making sure that like you can find a sustainable plan, because as always, the long-term perspective is what matters more, both in terms of progress and in terms of the like the enjoyment of the practice itself. Because if you are in constantly like, whoops, I need to take two months off because I got wrecked, like that isn't enjoying your program, that your process. And that also leads you to get stressed and like, oh shit, I lost a lot of time. And when I get back, I'm going to train extra hard. And oh, guess what you're doing? You're repeating yesterday. And then you get wrecked.
Yeah. Don't. It's this kind of idea that like we have, yeah. If we talk about like, hyper like just general sort of training, we have minimum effective dosage of training, the minimum amount of training you need to make progress over a period of time. Then we have the optimal amount of training, which is the optimal number of repeat sets or duration you need to build strength, endurance, whatever. Then you have this idea of maximum recoverable volume, and there can be quite a good gulf between optimal, the maximum volume you can recover from, and then the volume, once you exceed maximum recoverable volume, you could be on this line where like, oh, I'm doing a lot of work and I'm recovering, but I'm not compensating. The body's not adapting because the energy is just going into recovering from that workout. That's definitely one of these things that I think a lot of people hit on handstands. Like, nothing's gotten better for quite some time, or I haven't added reps, but I can still do my 5 reps or 10 reps of this. And that's kind of when you have to start questioning, like, am I doing too much? It's definitely one of the ways, like, am I, you know, progress can be slow, obviously, because we're doing a skill and complex kind of actions. But at the same time, it's like, oh, is it too much? You know, it's like, it's also that idea, like, in a lot of handstands, like, we take every set to almost failure, basically. This is one of the things, like, we fail, like, how do we stop our sets most of the time? It's because we fell out. It's not, oh, because we hit a time. Now, obviously, it comes down to skill, and you might just fall off your balance point and not compensate for balance quick enough. Or it's just like, oh, you get to that point. And I think this is one of those things you've said before. What I really enjoy is like, you know, every handstand looks shit in its last 10 seconds. And if you can hold it for 10 seconds, then it's, you know, by definition, you're on your final 10 seconds.
You're on your last 10 seconds.
Yeah. And like learning to terminate your sets early before you reach that point, making that choice like, okay, I've done, you know, 75% of the thing I intended to do. Generally, you could stop the set there and go, okay, I wanted to do 60 seconds. I hit 45 seconds, 52 seconds. I feel like my technique is going to go fighty and I'm going to break down. You could choose like, okay, I'm just going to push myself down and come out of the balance. And this way of like not taking everything to total failure, either technical failure or muscular failure, is one of the ways that you can actually control intensity and control basically energy management as well. Getting on to kind of like, there is the difference as well for us between skill work and conditioning work as well. And for beginners, this kind of overlaps. But as you get into sort of intermediate working on shapes and other stuff, you kind of have to go like, oh, for the skill work, I'm very clear. I'm going to work on straddle to tuck or tuck to straight or something like this. I want it to be really easy. I don't want to fight for it. I want to try and like make the skill as nice to do as possible, and not go like, oh, everything's just going to be terrible. Like working this kind of idea of like separating the skill into like, oh, okay, it's not going to be challenging. I'm not going to aim for maximum holds. And at the same time, when it starts to get fighty or difficult, but I know I can do the skill, like obviously things will be messy when you're learning stuff. But once you know, okay, I can do it smooth enough normally, but it's got fighty, I've come off the line. Choosing to end the sets there will actually work great for energy management.
Yeah. Yeah, I think also there is a one thing that I'm kind of a proponent for is like, I do certainly value endurance, but past a certain level, depending on the practitioner's level in general, I just think that it's like it's a very good way to add loads of fatigue without getting anything done.
Yeah.
And like an example of that is someone who can do one arm handstands and are working on kind of getting good at one arm handstands, and then they add in a bunch of sets of two arm longer holds. Like, it's not necessarily wrong per se, but like, could you be using that energy better? And in my opinion, yes, I think you could.
Yeah.
Because if you can demonstrate a 2 minutes or like two minutes plus handstand on two arms, you can do it, but it's not something that you like aim to do all the time, but like it isn't a problem for you, then I think it's just basically busy work. And like, unless you want to push the time on two arms, I think you'd be better off working on one arm's technique and like, and even endurance on one arm, because you're going so into kind of like, hand balancing terms, like past 2 minutes, we're starting to get into long distance running. If we use that equivalent, and long distance running is important for those who want to long distance run. Like in general, hand balancing, like towards higher level, it happens much more in the sprint to mid-range running, I would say. So I think you're in general better off working there, getting better at those skills, because getting better at that, getting better at one arm endurance will increase your two arm endurance by more than getting better at two arm endurance will increase your one arm. Because I know of people who can do two arms for like 5 minutes and they can't one arm.
Yeah.
So whereas the other way around, like getting good at one arm doesn't get you a 5 minute handstand whatsoever, but you'll quite likely be very well able to maintain a 2+ minute without working on it. So I think in that sense, it's a much better investment of your time and your energy. And again, like also in terms of your joints, because like, at least in my experience, the things that kind of like wreck my wrists and like forearms and elbows and even shoulders are sometimes just really long holds. Like, because you need to kind of strain those last seconds. Like, you won't be nice and efficient for the last seconds. You'll be roughing stuff out when you get like mega fatigued. Whereas like if you're doing like an actual long distance run, like your running form might certainly be worse for like the last couple of kilometers you run, but like the difference isn't going to be as significant because your legs are pretty good structures to run on.
It's definitely it's also this kind of idea of like random shotting endurance work into a workout is not good, where like endurance, once you're kind of like, once you're into the minute zone, endurance can be very like, you, if you want to work on it, it can be a very structured way of training, because you're beyond the point where like, okay, technical breakdown is going to cause a mistake. Well, it will a bit, but in general, it can be a thing. Whereas if you're just going like, oh, I'm just going to hold as long as I can at the ends of the workout, where versus I'll go, okay, I'm going to try work on my endurance, and I'm going to have a structured plan where I'm like, okay, today's endurance day. I'll follow this amount of sets. I will have this amount of rest time. Generally, like the rule of thumb is like a 1-to-1 rest time to hold time, or looking to actually get into a point where you're getting 90% recovered. So like, okay, I'm trying to go from 110 to 120. I'll hold for 110 and then rest a minute, and then I'll come back up and I might see that my hold time goes to 105. And this kind of reduction, yes, you are reducing your time, but at the same time, you're actually fatiguing to build a bit of fatigue, which will cause a bit of compensation if you recover from it. And then hopefully you'll see things going up. And then obviously, like, it's that last, the last 10 second issue when like form breaks down to the point where you have to start doing big corrections. You're like, oh, is it, yeah. Are you going, are you building useful endurance there? Like building fight, we always talk about this. But at the same time, like if you're holding for a minute, you know, minute 10, minute 30, you know how to fight at this stage. You've gone through the process, so maybe you don't have to fight in your endurance. You just accept, like, okay, last 10 seconds, form has gone to shit, stop there. Or reestablish better form as properly as you can. Like, give yourself, once again, introduce constraints. I will take 2 attempts to reestablish my line correctly. If I don't, then I won't stay there fighting for a 10-second fight.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, as you can hear, like, there is a bunch, there's a myriad of different ways that you can go about this, and yeah, it isn't easy. That's basically what we're trying to say here. Not trying to say all this to confuse you, like, because there is a secret proper method to do it. There isn't a secret proper method to do it, and that's exactly why we're discussing it.
Yeah.
Whereas within certain training forms, such as weight training, like, there isn't a perfect method there either, but there are a couple that are tried and tested that are, on average, very useful and can produce some sort of predictable gains for a good coach who understands the client. But for handstands, it's really complicated. And getting to know your own body is part of this process. That's also why we've written our programs the way we do, that like we're not trying to steer everything from above, because like we know it's not possible. Like we know that like it isn't possible to account for all of the differences in body structures and time constraints and like will to practice and like drive and like all like this million things. So it's not possible. So then that by default means that like it's to a degree up to you to learn how your body functions, what you can deal with, and how you can go about this. Because ultimately, if you want to enjoy the practice of hand balancing, you need to find a sustainable way of enjoying the practice of hand balancing.
Yeah.
And it isn't something someone can directly teach you. Of course, a coach, if they work directly with you, can say, because they know about your life, they know about your training schedule, you communicate it, so you start building an understanding of what can work and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Then you can start to be talking about these types of things. But it's super tricky, and like we haven't even mentioned like the entire like mobility component within here, which is like also an enormous thing, which is like a different topic, of course. But that'll also just be a significant thing in terms of like both how fast one is to develop, but also like someone learning handstands, like they'll need to spend a goddamn long time on developing the mobility, or else they'll just ruin their wrists learning it.
Yeah.
Like, there are people out there where like you see their shoulder flexibility and you just have to go, yeah, you know what, like if you're going to learn a handstand with these shoulders, it's going to take you an enormous amount of time and you might wreck your wrist. So either we need to get on your shoulder mobility, and if you refuse shoulder mobility, well then parallettes might be the thing for you, because the angle of a wrist would be like a semi-planche at all time. And Yeah. It's like wrists do not like semi-planched position for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, it's definitely like that kind of like this is the thing with handstands or with straight handstands as well. Even a subtle diagonal or a subtle like forward lean of the shoulder off the ideal placement, particularly this happens in intermediates a lot when you're constantly gripping the ground to correct overbalance, can be building up some serious amount of time under tension on the wrists and on the fingers that slowly accumulates. And this is the kind of thing I think, if I remember right, and I could be wrong on this, is like collagen turnover, basically to kind of get to the point where like you've recovered from your training stress and the tendons takes about 72 hours if it's pretty intense, whereas muscles are ready to go in 24 to 36 hours. So you can be overtraining the connective tissue side of things. That's slowly just accumulating a small bit of fatigue and then it goes. I suppose this is kind of a good way to segue on the way into our next topic, which is kind of like, what are the warning signs when I've trained too much and what should I be looking at? What are the early warning signs that I need to do something a bit less?
Definitely.
So,
yeah, like, I think one of the most common ones that I feel is just like this kind of constant kind of soreness everywhere, particularly kind of in like the back and kind of around the serratus and the shoulders, and the kind of this just deep soreness that doesn't fade, or like you basically like it's not a perfect way to view it, but I remember like this really old school gymnast from Norway, like he was the best gymnast in Norway for ages and ages. He's like 50 and still like a tank, Espen Jansen.
Yeah.
He told a friend of mine, yeah, you know, if you're sore, don't train. If you're not sore, train, he said. I mean, it's not perfect at all, but yeah, there is something to it. Like, if you are super sore, it might not be the greatest idea. You want to feel reasonably fresh.
Yeah.
But then again, like, last workout I had when I wasn't sore, I was garbage. Day after, I came in like a little bit sore from the stuff I'd done the day before, and I killed it. So yeah, it's not perfect, but like I didn't have that kind of like really deep, holy shit, now I'm like it's strenuous to move my neck and my scapula.
Yeah.
Then it's not the greatest of ideas.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the things that we go through joint by joint, like wrists and fingers are obviously our kind of the highest up on our hierarchy of things we need to protect because they take the longest to heal. And forearms are after that. They're kind of connected, obviously. Everything's connected. But it's this idea of like what I look for when I know I need to back off is the feeling that my wrists are inflated. There's a very clear feeling that they feel like they've got, you know, there's probably some kind of inflammation, but they feel kind of like they're bulging out. And this is one of the key signs for me to go like, okay, it's time to back off. And it's what I encourage people to look at it because it's like, it's not sore. Like full range of motion is still there and everything is fine. I can still put weight on it. But when it's lasting, like I do my training session or do a training session, whatever I'm doing, and then I, you know, it's going to be sore after the training or kind of feel worked, basically. But if it's persisting for 2 days or 3 days, then I'm like, okay, if I'm not going into like the next session feeling good, then I'm like, okay, I'm probably doing a bit too much. It's either time to not do something so heavy or just take a few more days off and just rest. That kind of thing. So that's kind of, this is the kind of thing where it gets a lot of people. I feel when people, oh, the wrist is feeling weird, I'll, you know, throw the floss band on, I'll do more mobility, I'll warm up longer, which, don't get me wrong, is a strategy and does work. But at the same time, it's like, it's better to take a few days off now early versus a month off later when you've done too much and your wrist can't take weight.
Yeah, I think for me, like the main wrist warning signs is like when those two tendons by the thumb, if you press into that area and that feels kind of painful, or if that area feels painful when you put pressure on the floor, like that is really one to watch out for. I've had like dozens of like small injuries and niggles in that area. Same is kind of like on top of the wrist by the kind of the tendons that go to the fingers. Like if that area also feels kind of like there feels like there's kind of pressure in there when you put put the weight on your hands. This is also definitely like another area. And of course, there can be a myriad of different places in the wrist, but like those two are like kind of the most common ones I've seen.
Yeah.
And experienced on the wrist. So yeah, being really, being gentle when you're feeling that, and like that general thing we always say of like, slowly apply pressure to your hands, so that, because if your wrist is busted and you don't know yet, and you put 20% of pressure on your wrist, a little bit here and there for a period of 10 minutes, you're going to know about this directly, and you can either mitigate it or not do anything, compared to like, oh yeah, I'm just going to YOLO one arm right now. And whoopsie, that, it was actually pretty painful. And then you feel the knife in the wrist and you sad face. It's not a very good idea. And yeah, like, I mean, forearms, like one I've seen there is kind of that, like, I'm sure some of you experience it. It's on the, if you turn your palm towards the ceiling, it's on the kind of the muscle on the inside of your forearm there. It feels like a very, like, it feels like a tense guitar string when you get wrecked there. And
yeah,
like, it kind of goes all the way. And like, it very often, like you do a handstand or something and you grip, and when you come down and you release the grip, like it kind of shoots kind of like a pain.
Yeah.
Like pain through that side of the forearm.
Yeah. That's definitely a big warning sign. Actually, you do your set, it feels fine, and then, oh shit, you come down, you've got pain. That's like, yeah, that's ringing alarm bells for me when I get that.
Mm.
That's
yeah, and it's like, and of course, like make sure that you do something easier and lighter as you warm up, so that you basically know what you have to, what your situation is before you start applying any like heavy pressure and so on.
Yeah.
And I think for like the shoulders, yeah, like rotator cuff issues, like pain in the front of the shoulder, classic one. Like it feels kind of like a sort of like a line of pain down the front of the shoulder. Like it can be a ton of different things. It can be in your biceps, like all the rotators, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Very hard to diagnose. But like this one is a common one. Pain when lifting the arm above head. Pain when elevating the shoulder, pain if going into Mexican, like there's a ton of these ones in the shoulder as well. But like as soon as you feel some of these ones, or like the indication of one, and that's where knowing your body comes in, because like I can't tell you how an indication of one feels like. Yeah. I know very acutely when I feel a certain level of what I can only describe as pressure in my wrist, and I know that if I do a thing on that wrist, it is going to hurt. And yeah, like I will always like I remember like the several times I've done a set, I do like one arm, and I put like the hand down again, and I feel that pressure. I usually just cave in by bending the elbow immediately.
Yeah.
Because I know that like I'll have to crack out, like I'll need to do my wrist crack, or else I'm going to end up in pain if I apply pressure onto it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this kind of thing of like watching, like the other thing is like when you get kind of intermediate and you can hold, looking at the videos and looking where your weight placement is in the hand is quite a, if you've got that pain towards the thumb or something, there's an issue going on, the body will know that it's going on before you actually consciously aware of it. You'll notice like the weight shift will begin to go towards the little finger and ring finger and this kind of thing. You'll see like, oh, there'll be compensation. Maybe your elbows aren't locking fully to avoid loading that segment. These kind of things of like looking how your form is changing, what you're not consciously of, or even like the classic one, oh, my wrist on the right side is a bit jank, so then my handstand is shifted over to the left, and then you're like, oh, my form is terrible, I must try and fix it. It's like, well, maybe the body's trying to avoid that for that reason. You're just not consciously aware of it yet. This is why, like, I think particularly with wrists, like, just getting your thumb and poking in and feeling all like the tendons and the bones just in there can be very useful, because if you touch, like if you've got feel no pain on flexion, extension, rotation, but then you get in there and start touching things and they start hurting or they send a jumping pain along the forearm, that's a good, like there's a warning sign. So this kind of stuff, like this is what I do, like as part of my warm up, just before I get like even put it into a plank or anything, I just squeeze my wrists a bit and just feel them out and see is anything there at a subconscious level or a sub-awareness level that I haven't found yet. And that would go, like, even if I, if I find that kind of thing, and then even if I put the weight in my hands, then I might notice that, like, even if I'm doing, say, a plank or just, you know, so just basic kind of wrist warm up, I'll notice that I might be shifting or putting the hands into a bit more supination to try to avoid these kind of things. So you can find these kind of early warning signs in different ways. And then, you know, then you can ask questions like, oh, okay, I'll warm up a bit, re-squeeze the wrist, grab it. Does it feel a bit better? Okay, you know, I know my body, so I know what to avoid and what not. But at the same time, like, I only know this because I've been doing this a very long time and I've gone through a lot of periods of busting my wrists and forearms. So,
yep.
And it's definitely like, there's that kind of thing of like, for those anatomy nerds out there, you can look it up on Wikipedia or probably in the show notes. If you look at the forearm, they go like the flexor carpi ulnaris or radialis, the muscle basically on the edge of the forearm when you're looking palms up on the little finger. If that's like feeling like a banjo string, and it's like super tight and you can't squeeze into it, that's one of the very early warning signs for something's about to go bad in the forearm. And this kind of constant chronic forearm tightness that doesn't go away. Like, your forearm should be kind of squishy. And if you've been training too much, and like people who climb who are listening to this podcast will also notice this idea of like, oh, if I squeeze my forearms and they're just rock solid, I can't sink my fingers or thumbs into it, then maybe you have a problem. Then maybe it's time to do like relaxed stretching, forearm release, this kind of thing to try see if you can clear it up. Or that's when you might need to go space your sessions out more, because clearly the muscle tonus from the training isn't reducing and that needs to like go away, basically, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just so many of these things that you... Like, there's of course enormously unique ones as well that like it's impossible to list everything.
Yeah.
But being aware of this, and I think like hand balancing is a discipline of body awareness, and yeah, getting acutely aware of pain, of signals, and all of these things are part of it, and you also develop like I am sure like quite a lot of like how to say. Pain tolerance and resilience in a way where like, because if I stand on my hands, and an equally heavy guy stands on his hands, like the amount of pressure going through the wrists will be the same. My technique will be better. So it might be better placed and so on. But the fact that like my joint is used to this, like the bones, the tendons, everything is used to this pressure. So it will not send the same kind of, pain signals. As another person might get. So
that's also like, it's kind of one of those things is like, oh, equating volume as well, training volume, like say a 50 kg person versus a 100 kg person doing the same amount of duration is a very different stress load on the body. So it's just throw that out, like,
yeah, it matters a lot too.
Yeah. Like, I'm learning that myself. I've, like, lost a huge amount of weight lately. I'm just trying to get my weight down as low as possible. And, yeah, like, it's night and day doing the stuff I'm doing. It's just like, oh, super easy. You know, nothing feels heavy. And it's like, oh, you know, that kind of thing. And even, like, for me, I'm gonna, like, it's, you know, whatever, 10% of my body weight or something like this. You know, if someone was like, oh, if I had my strength or levers... And then was 75 kilos instead of 90 kilos. And then you're like, well, you know, I'm doing the same thing. I'm holding the same amount of time, but the load and the weight and the force required through the fingers to correct the center of mass is very different.
Yep.
So this is the kind of thing where it gets very personal. Even like the length of your fingers.
Yep.
You know, length of your arms.
Hand size.
Yeah. Need giant hands.
So many things.
Yeah. This kind of thing. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's what we're, I suppose the point of the podcast today is we can give you rough guidelines and we want you to have like a game plan and training that can be flexible, but begin to like learn, become the expert in you. And that's the only way you're going to succeed long term in this game.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that is a nice way to sum it up in the end.
Yeah. Become the expert in you and that kind of thing. And the only way you're going to do that is by tracking things as well. And let's face it, your memory fails. So like journaling, we should probably release Handstand Journal 101.
Also another thing, of course, saying that, like, I mean, yeah, become an expert on your own body, but at the same time, listen to advice of other people, because you might not be correct about everything, and that's just how humans operate.
Yeah, basically. So, yeah, let's wrap it up there, actually. I think that's a good point.
Yep.
And yeah, other than that, thank you for tuning in to the Handstand Cast. I got a bit of a request. If you got this far, you know, getting some reviews and some ratings would be awesome for us. Please just do it on your podcast app, wherever you're listening. It really does help us. It's one of those things that actually helps much more than you think for getting us around. And, you know, if you like it, you know, tell your friends you like it. Other than that, I've been Emmett Lewis, and I'm here with Mikael Christiansen, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode, along with the show notes and any relevant references, on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.